This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Anne Stingel, leaves for Somalia tomorrow. Her first trip there was last spring. Stingel is a spokesperson for the American Red Cross. The International Committee of the Red Cross is the lead relief agency in Somalia. The Somalian relief effort is the largest Red Cross mission since World War II. This year, the Red Cross has delivered 146,000 metric tons of food to Somalia. The Red Cross has persisted in spite of anarchy and armed bandits. 8 Red Cross workers have lost their lives in the current unrest. I asked Stingel what she hopes will change for relief workers in Somalia when the U.S. troops get to work. They've already started to arrive.
Now, I'm speaking personally, not organizationally. Mostly for the workers themselves, for them to be able to carry out their work in a secure environment, for them to be able to carry out the mission that they were given when they went there. All of them went there to help stop the famine, to help stop the hunger, to put an end to children dying from a lack of food. And for the worker, I think that's what they all hope for. If I could speak for them, I think they would say that finally to be able to be successful in this operation, to stop the children from dying, to let the families return to their farms and to plant their seeds again and to herd their cattle, to return to their life.
Someone from Save the Children was just quoted in Time magazine as saying this: "We would like someone to explain what is going to happen with this mission because we're going to be in the middle of it." Do you have similar fears of that people will be caught in the middle and not really informed enough about what's happening?
Well, workers are rather isolated out in some of those villages, and that's why I think the relief agencies have them on alert. They are isolated, but I think that the military has been in discussion with, if I'm not mistaken, that they've been in discussion with the relief organizations. I guess it raises the question as what is the alternative. It was clearly not working before. The food was not getting through. People were dying. Relief workers were still in jeopardy. What was going on before was unacceptable.
Is the Red Cross on alert?
They have put their staff on alert for, there is an evacuation plan should the need arise.
How are you preparing for your trip to Somalia tomorrow?
In what way? In terms of psychologically?
Psychologically and in terms of what you're going to need to have with you.
I'm packing for heat. I know that's going to be very hot. Having been there in April and May, I'm fairly clear on what is required, that kind of thing. Also, I think psychologically I am better prepared than I was in April and May. I've been with the Red Cross since 66, and I've been in various conflict situations, and I was in the 84-85 drought. But this one, I was very naive in thinking I was prepared for what I was about to see. And when I got there, I was just overwhelmed by the enormity of the human suffering, by the level of human misery that was present in Somalia. I had never seen anything like it in my life and hope never to again. So at least this time I am a little more prepared for that kind of impact than I was before. I was caught a little off guard.
Can you share with us something that you witnessed during that trip in April and May that you were so unprepared for?
I think, first of all, it was the enormity. It wasn't just an isolated incident here or there. It was what I would notice as an individual and looking at other individuals. I would see that it was repeated everywhere. To watch a mother try to nurse a child that is dying in her arms of starvation, and she's just instinctively trying to nurse it and feed it, and she is so malnourished, she has nothing left to give it. And to see the child clutch at her, and literally claw at her, because it knows, again, instinctively, that this is where it gets its nourishment and its life. And again, nothing. And that poor mother, I mean, I'm a mother, and how must that feel? I kept looking at this, and as I said, it happened, didn't happen just once or twice. It was again and again and again. And I was thinking, that must be for a mother. That must be hell. The definition of hell, not to be able to give your child the nourishment that it needs to sustain life. You also see, going to the hospitals, and you see children that have been victims of just this random gunfire that goes on, and the hospital has brought them back and has given them, operated on them, fed them, and eventually they will leave. Then what happens to them? What are they released to in that kind of environment? In Bellet Wayne, I also saw mothers rubbing their children with animal blood because they believed it would help them. It was a place where I simply walked into an office and cried. It was a very emotional experience.
You know, everyone has been so moved just seeing pictures of what's happening in Somalia, and you wonder, who are these bandits who are allowing their own people to starve?
Yeah, I think it's a number simplification, but I think it has a lot of relevance here. If you're familiar with Golding's Lord of the Flies, it's very much like that. When you take away the social structure that a human being is used to, and in the case of Lord of the Flies, it was boys from a British boys' school. In Somalia, it is Somalis. But when you take away social structure and certain ethics and moral teachings, when you remove them from that environment, or remove those things from the environment that the people are in, which is the case in Somalia, when all of that is gone, there are some people who rise to the challenge and are the best that they can be, and there are others who sink to very animal behavior. And to me, Somalia is an absolute living Lord of the Flies. Lord of the Flies was very prophetic in that way. Now, I don't want anyone to lose sight of the fact that there are an awful lot of Somalis who are trying to be a force for good in their country. The ICRC is working with 1,600 members of the Somali Red Crescent. There are women's groups and voluntary organizations in the villages and in the towns. UNICEF, Save the Children, the Red Cross, they all work with them in helping with the distribution. There are a lot of people, and so it's not always just a case, well, there are the bandits and the starving. There are people that really want to be a force for change, and I think they need to be empowered by that, or empowered in doing that, certainly.
My guest is Anne Stingel, spokesperson for the American Red Cross. She leaves for Somalia tomorrow. She was last there in the spring. My guest will be back after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Anne Stingel of the Red Cross. What have Red Cross workers faced in Somalia that's different from any other Red Cross experience?
I think it's a combination of psychological factors. I think this is one of the more difficult psychological assignments or psychological challenges for a relief worker. And I wouldn't want to speak for other agencies, but my guess is they might agree with me. You have, first of all, a relief worker faced with people in this condition. And we've all seen the images, and they're all around you. And you see them dying. You see the bodies collected. You see the burial mounds. You're faced with just the sheer enormity of suffering. Then you're faced with the fact that you can only do so much. You can work from sun up to sundown. You can lift grain. You can do all of those things. And there are still people dying. And sometimes food won't get through because a thug has looted the warehouse. And you know that because of that, more people are going to die. And then you overlay on top of that the personal security risk that is in place for relief workers there because they are connected with food. So it is a very difficult situation in terms of psychological effects. And also that in other conflicts, and I'm speaking for the ICRC who is engaged in so many conflicts around the world, in many of them, certainly with the exception of Bosnia, but with many of them, there are sides, particular sides. There are particular front lines. Yes, there's sporadic fighting here and there, and it may be somewhat scattered, but it seems to have some methodology to it or some sense of organization, as crazy as that seems with conflict. But in Somalia, it's anarchy. You're surrounded by unpredictable people with guns, children with guns, children with grenade launchers, and they're riding around on these vehicles, and it's all around you. The rifle fire is constant. If you're in a feeding center, constant. In fact, I was in a Save the Children center, and there was incoming fire. So it's the volatility and the unpredictability of it that makes it difficult as well.
Did you have any direct encounters with any of the bandits, any of the teenagers who ride around on those trucks with guns?
Did I have? I stayed very, very clear of them. Quite. No. They're very unpredictable, and you're not encouraged to deal directly with them in most cases. I know I had a video camera with me, and there was one blocking the street and turning around, and it was extremely heavily armed. And I wanted to tape it, and they told me not to. I mean, not to provoke these people at all. They really do terrorize the streets. They rule the streets. And the security. And once you decide, okay, I'm going in, you can't sit around and worry about it. But you're aware of it. You're constantly aware of it.
What kind of protection do you have at the Red Cross kitchens and the Red Cross camps?
There are security teams that the clan elders, the Red Cross works with the clan elders in organizing the kitchens, and the clan elders select the manpower. I mean, the Red Cross simply doesn't have enough people to be able to carry out every single thing in a relief operation of this magnitude. So they work with the clan elders. They select people to help distribute the food. They may turn it over to, like I said, one of the voluntary groups, one of the women's groups. They also then select out the security team.
What did you eat when you were in Somalia in April and May? And was it a crisis for you to eat knowing that other people were starving?
That does go through your mind, absolutely. It's one of those things that you have to decide that for people within a relief agency, if you starve to death, you aren't going to help anyone. So it's something you do have to work through. But you're certainly conscious of it as you eat. That while you're there, someone else has nothing, and it adds to the psychological difficulty. Quite frankly, it also makes it for me. I noticed it when I came home and went to a grocery store again. I mean, I was reminded of how much we have to go. I'm just kind of talking about things that hit me when I came back, and go into a restaurant and you see these huge portions and people aren't even able to finish them. And my own children who, you know, they hate to see me come back from these things because I, you know, I just am fanatic about wasting food. And they have to live with that for a while.
Is there clean water to cook with in Somalia?
No, the water is not safe. The water that is boiled, you know, in cooking for the rice and so forth, it is boiled so that that's somewhat clean. But the relief agencies all bring in bottled water for their staff.
Do the relief workers eat the same food as they give to the Somalians?
No, for most of the agencies there, the food is flown in for them, and I'm sure it runs the same risks as the other food, but they try to do it with an eye to making it as much like home or as they can, with an eye to how much stress can you put on a relief worker.
Do the relief workers eat their food in the presence of Somalians who are starving, or do they have a separate...
Never. No, you never eat in front of the people. I mean, even if you're walking around with, you know, I mean, and you've gone all day and you haven't eaten and you have crackers in your pocket. No, you never do that.
So where do they eat?
In their homes. They all have houses or little apartment kind of dwellings, and they eat in the privacy of their home.
What protection do you have against the diseases that you'll be exposed to?
A lot of shots before you leave. I just finished having mine yesterday. And malaria pills, those kinds of things. I mean, you protect yourself as well as you can and then just hope for the best. Of course, there are some things you cannot be inoculated for, and tuberculosis is so rampant there. Also, cholera, the immunization for cholera is not always effective, so they recommend against getting immunized for it. It's just something you take precautions, you do what you can, and then you have to not worry about it. And quite frankly, when you see what condition the people are in, you don't worry about yourself anymore. You really don't, and that's not an attempt to sound noble. You're so struck with how much worse it is for those people that must live there that it very quickly puts things in perspective.
You've described incredible psychological pressures that face relief workers in Somalia. Do relief workers ever kind of crack up, break down?
I haven't heard of it happening. I'm sure it happens. You know, in any situation like that. But I know that when I was there, there was a doctor that, as he went to the different feeding centers, he was also alert to signs that the difficulty of the situation might be getting to some of the workers. And then they're withdrawn, and in fact, they're withdrawn periodically just into Kenya so that they can relax and have a hot shower and then go back. So they try, you know, they try to be aware of the stress and the difficulty that the assignment places on the workers.
Tomorrow you leave for Somalia. Did you volunteer to go to Somalia?
Oh yes, and I've wanted to go back since I was there before.
Why do you want to go back? I know it was a very upsetting experience for you.
Yes, because once you see that kind of human need, you really want to do whatever you can do to help. It's a commitment I made in the middle of the feeding centers, or in the displaced persons camps. Every instinct in my body said, feed these people. And at the time I was in Mogadishu, there hadn't been no food coming in since November, and this was in May. And in the end, just all I could do was walk out of the camp. And I made a commitment to myself and to those people that I would do everything I could to raise awareness and to help bring their story and make it known. And this is just an ongoing part of that.
How long will you be in Somalia?
It's not clear right now, at least 2 weeks, if not more.
How does your family feel about you going?
Well, they've long ago given up changing my mind about anything like this. I think they're a little concerned. In fact, my husband, for the first time ever last night, expressed concern. He usually just looks at me patiently. I'm not as concerned as I was, I think, the first time. I'm much more aware of the reality of it and can deal with it.
Well, I want to wish you good luck with your trip to Somalia, and I'll let you prepare for it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Ann Stingle is spokesperson for the American Red Cross. She leaves for Somalia tomorrow. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.